goals conceded in the first half, some shambolic defending, some even worse goalkeeping, no joy for a club legend up front, and any positivity around a new era has quickly evaporated. No, you have not tuned in to a Manchester United podcast. This is still the Tireless Den podcast focusing on Reading FC, and this is episode number 305, where we will be going through those comedy of errors after Reading lose 4-0 to Rotherham. My name is Ollie Allen, stepping in to host this week's show, and joining me is View from the Dolan writer, Ben Thomas. Ben, how are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, not too bad. It would be nice to do one of these when we've had a 4-0 win, but when we will get that again, who knows? Apart from that, yeah, I'm all good, mate. I've been enjoying the sun, which is always a pleasant experience in this country.
Yeah, I think it has been the best tactic just to try and forget about Saturday over the last couple of days. But I am going to drag you back into the mire of what was that, the absolute calamity on Saturday afternoon. There's definitely a bit of a sense of deja vu. You were saying, when are we going to get one of these 4-0 wins? And I remember sitting here almost a year ago now. I'm pretty sure it might even been with you and Mark after that 4-0 away defeat to Huddersfield at the end of August last season. It feels very similar. We collapsed in similar style up there. So hopefully we'll try and bring some sort of perspective on the Rotherham game in this week's show. It's always, I suppose, slightly easier to do it a little bit further removed. We're now just over 48 hours on from that defeat. So hopefully not quite as hot-headed and instant reaction that it would have been on Saturday. But we'll get into the recap very, very shortly. As always, I mentioned to our sponsors, ZCZ Films. Big shout out to them, as always, for their continued support of the podcast. We definitely wouldn't be able to do what we do and definitely not be able to gee ourselves up for podcasts like these without the incentive that they provide. And likewise to all of our Patreon subscribers who continue to donate monthly to the cause to help both the website and the podcast. If you would also like to get involved, if you enjoy what we do here on the Tireless Den, both the website and the podcast, and all the other little bits we do as well. You might have seen we started doing Twitter Spaces on Friday night, and Ben's been doing his post-game videos as well that go up on Twitter after every home game. So if you do enjoy what we do, please do go over and donate as much or as little as you would like over on the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/thetireless end. Right then, let's get into it then. It's the recap for Rotherham United 4, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Ben, let's get straight into it. And it's been pretty easy to get straight into it, I have to be honest, in Reading games so far this season, purely because we always seem to concede incredibly, incredibly early. It's the fourth game in a row that Reading have conceded a goal within the first 10 minutes, 9 minutes against Blackpool on the opening day, just 4 minutes against Cardiff last weekend. Obviously, we did come back to win that game, but even so, 10 minutes it took for Stevenage to open the scoring in the Carabao Cup in midweek, and then 7 minutes here against Rotherham. We came into the game with a bit of positivity, I'd say, Ben. You know, obviously, despite losing to Stevenage in the Carabao Cup, in midweek, we obviously had the fantastic Start Fans Forum, which you superbly chaired on Thursday night with Paul Lynch and Mark Bone. I think people came out of that with, as I say, quite a lot of optimism of sort of the direction the club was heading in, despite the issues that we faced off the pitch. But I would hesitantly say that positivity, as I say, quickly deteriorated after 7 minutes on Saturday afternoon when 37-year-old centre-back Richard Wood beat Tom McIntyre in the air to put Rotherham one goal up. And we spoke about this last week with Ross on the podcast after conceding against Cardiff, and, you know, maybe in the wider scale of Saturday afternoon against Rotherham, conceding early wasn't the main issue. And we'll get onto some of the bigger talking points in a minute, but it is this trend now, is that for a side like Reading, who, you know, have not done very well in terms of coming from behind. I think the win against Cardiff last weekend was the first time he'd come from behind to win a game for 9 months. It was the first time he'd come from behind to win a game at home for over 3 years. So for a side who have those sort of statistics to be conceding early goals at such alarming regularity is a major, major issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the balance of the week overall, you know, most of us were on kind of cloud nine with the Cardiff result, with, you know, the amount of kind of money that they had spent and the players they brought in. You know, it was a great result to come back and pick up 3 points at home, which felt, you know, obviously we've had the summer, but it felt like a long time previous to that we'd won at home. It probably wasn't, but it felt like that, really. Stevenage was kind of Stevenage. You know, the changes were deliberate and enforced in a lot of respects. Won't dwell on the fans forum too much, but you know, that was all the people that were there and listened online and have fed back were very positive about what was said. And then obviously we have the disaster that we had on Saturday, really. Before the game, I felt a draw would have been great for us, you know, to keep us ticking over in the league. I know a lot of others like us felt that a draw would have been good as well in the prediction league. But you know, when you concede 3 goals in what, 20 minutes, and then finish the half 4-0, you're not coming back from that, even with a team that we have at the moment that's a bit makeshift. There's no way we're coming back from that, and all credit to Rotherham, because we just collapsed and they pounced, you know, scored the goals they scored, and that was that, them home and dry, really. And all they had to do was keep it tight in the second half, which they obviously did. So it's very, very frustrating, having had the result on Saturday, the words on Thursday, and, you know, the kind of the morale that was seemingly boosted from that, to then go and have a team put out a performance, you know, like the one that we had to endure on Saturday. I don't think it was a massive surprise that a result like this was coming. I think the manner of the defeat and the you know, with all due respect to them, the opponents to be hammered 4-0 will have set alarm bells ringing, both at the club, fan base, of course, and kind of, you know, it's one of those where everyone's running us off and they'll be kind of, you know, licking their lips, because actually we're starting to prove people right. I kind of had to step away from it on Saturday, really, and not go on social media or look at anything too much. But Sunday, you know, I spent a bit of time having a look at the highlights, the lowlights, and looking at other teams in terms of where we're at. And there's a lot of other teams that have started, you know, worse than we have, who have spent more money and you know, realistically in a better position than we are. So it's certainly not panic mode at the moment, but the individual performances that collectively cost us the points were quite concerning, and the fact they went downhill so quickly in the game as well, to just lose the confidence at the flick of a switch, is for me pretty worrying.
Well, one of those individual performances comes from a certain Mr. Joe Lumley, who I'm amazed neither of us have mentioned over 5 minutes into the podcast. So far, he was certainly the main scapegoat, I suppose, should we put it, from Saturday's result. You know, look, Middlesbrough fans, when Joe Lumley signed on loan for the season, Middlesbrough fans did warn us that he was a slightly calamitous goalkeeper, despite him having, I think he had, you know, certainly up there for the most clean sheets in the Championship last season. You know, we were told that he had more than one error in him, and, you know, that was certainly the case on Saturday afternoon, particularly for, well, you couldn't do much about the first goal, but certainly the rest of them. The second goal, he's beaten far too easily at his near post. You know, albeit it's a hell of a strike from Connor Washington. You know, the third goal is arguably the pick of the bunch in terms of the error. You know, it's your classic goalkeeper howler, really, as he sort of just spills Jamie Lindsay's shot through his legs inexplicably, really. And you know. I think the club Twitter account tweeted that goal was a mistake by Lumley, and usually you sort of get the very PR line that Rotherham have scored. So, you know, it's bad when the official club account is tweeting Joe Lumley makes a mistake. And then the fourth goal is, again, just so simple from Rotherham's point of view, ball over the top. You know, Joe Lumley tries to come out and get it, completely misses it. And Chidsey Ogbene, you know, can score into an empty net. And, you know, look, Ben, it was a whole team's worth of poor performances on Saturday, but certainly it was, from Joe Lumley, it was less absolutely fabulous, but more absolutely shambolic.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to go after him, and it's always easy to go after the goalkeeper. You know, De Gea's had it in recent weeks, and at one point he was the best goalkeeper in the world. Lumley won't ever reach those heights. He never has been the best goalkeeper in the world, and never will be, unfortunately, to be realistic. But, you know, certainly for the third goal with Lindsay's one, I mean, there's no excuse for that. You know, the other ones you could say, well, you know, out of position a little bit, not protected for the fourth goal, wasn't it, where he kind of came out and no one was already taking charge of the situation there. And we could look at, you know, the central defence, which we will do in a minute. But the concern really is that it's the speed of the collapse rather than the individual errors. And, you know, any goalkeeper in any division all across the world will always have those errors in them. It doesn't matter what position or what team they play for, how highly they're rated, they will always be prone to those errors. They're always capable of those. The problem for Joe Lumley is that he came in with such a negative fanfare from, you know, Borough supporters, not so much QPR fans, but then obviously our fans felt that they had to jump on that bandwagon as well. And effectively now, for me, he's kind of on a hard into nothing, because whatever he does, if he plays against Blackburn, whatever he does, people won't forget those errors, because they go, well, he's done it now, and he's capable of it, and we know that because he's had previous with Middlesbrough and other teams that he's played for. So it's clearly going to be a concern. The other issue that we've got is that we don't have the strength and depth there. So we started the season or pre-season with like five goalkeepers or whatever. We're now down to kind of three, technically four with Boyce Clark. But are any of those ready to step in with, you know, Bazanis Anderson and Boyce Clark, who just mentioned? Are they able to step in and take his place? Probably not. So, you know, realistically, I don't see Ince and the management there just kind of binning Lumley off and going, right, you sit on the bench, because we're three games into a season. And I would be very, very surprised if they then said, right, well, he's not going to play again. It's very, very difficult now, very, very difficult. And I think the players around him need to step up. I think the players around him need to, hopefully they've done it privately, rally around him. It didn't seem like they did that at the game on Saturday, which again is a problem. So there are lots of factors there. But whichever way you look at it, he had an absolute shocker, and he's not going to be able to forget that for a while. So he's got to move on as best he can to try and pick up the performance level, really.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that is the big thing now with Joe Lumley, is does he stay in, you know, certainly, you know, short term, at least for the Blackburn game on Wednesday night. You know, there was even some calls for him to be taken off at half time on Saturday afternoon, just because he had such a shocking performance in that first half. David, we had a question in the mailbag from David Miles, who says, what's stopping Ince from making the subs decisions at the right time? We could see Lumley's head go down, and why couldn't he? And it is a really tricky one, because, as you say, you know, this wasn't just your sort of ordinary goalkeeper calamity. And look, I generally have a fair amount of sympathy for goalkeepers, because ultimately they're in a position of the pitch where if they make a mistake, if they make an error, then it's going to lead to a goal. You know, they are, you know, I think for me, goalkeeping is the hardest position on the football pitch, because they are in that scenario. You know, if you make a mistake as a striker, then, you know, yeah, you might not get a shot away, or your team might lose the ball or whatever, but it's not going to directly lead to a goal being conceded. You know, whereas if you're a goalkeeper and you make an error, you know, as Lumley did multiple times on the weekend, and it wasn't just the goals. There were other incidents where, you know, he made a couple of errors, and Rotherham nearly scored from them as well. So it is a tricky one. You know, obviously, well, Paul Ince mentioned it in his post-match interview that Joe Lumley kept the clean sheet in the second half. I'm not quite sure how much credit that really gives Joe Lumley, considering Rotherham barely pressed for another goal and he didn't actually have a save to make in that second half. So it's definitely decision time for Paul Ince on Wednesday night. And as you say, it's about how players rally around him, because, you know, as you say, they didn't seem to me, particularly after that third goal on Saturday, which was the most glaring error, you know, there was no Reading defender going over to Lumley and sort of patting him on the back and sort of trying to gear him up. And as a result, his confidence just looked completely shot for the rest of the first half and, you know, was making error after error, really. So a big night for him on Wednesday night. You know, I was quite impressed with him actually on against Cardiff in the first home game. Made a couple of good saves. You know, we spoke about him on the podcast last week. He was very commanding of his area and everything like that. So he's got that in him. But, you know, as we've seen on Saturday, he's also got those errors in him. So, yeah, big decision for Paul Ince to make on Wednesday night. As you say, wasn't helped by centre-backs. You know, certainly Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes in particular, you know, came in for some criticism at the weekend. Their weaknesses were certainly exposed. Benjamin Vickers says, were the second and third goals Lumley errors, or should there have been a sweeper there covering long balls, particularly in a three-man defence? Similarly, Chris Dunn says, why do we play such a high line when the opposition had pace up front? And yeah, that there was a remarkable similarity in particular between the second and the fourth goals. You know, both, you know, such straightforward balls over the top, you know, whether it was a case of Reading playing, you know, a high line or the defender switching off or not being able to cope with the pace of Ogbeni in particular. As I say, you know, McIntyre and Holmes' weaknesses, you know, definitely exposed on Saturday afternoon. And, you know, often some suggestion that perhaps they get a slightly easy ride as they're academy graduates. But at the end of the day, look, they're 22 and 23-year-old centre-backs playing outside, you know, playing alongside Andy Eardom, who, yes, is the captain and who, yes, is experienced, but he's playing out of position, you know, in that back three. And, you know, look, I think for me, Ben, you know, Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes are definitely a potential centre-back pairing for the future in, you know, sort of 3-4 years' time. But right now, you just need some more experience, you know, as soon as possible in that back three, you know, whether that's Scott Down or Sam Hutchinson coming back from injury or Naby Sarr, you know, finally getting over the line and being confirmed as a Reading player. But changes need to be made to that back three because, you know, their weaknesses and the holes were exposed so easily at the weekend.
Well, the danger that we've got as a fan base now is we're going back already 3 league games into the season, 4 games in total, is that we're pining for players that have been injured and have signed but not signed. And we're putting, we're almost putting an inverted pressure on them, right? Well, everything will be all right when those players come back. Personally, for me, Hutchinson was a massive loss, you know, before the first game of the season, because he was one of the star performers that we had in pre-season. You know, so many games I saw him against West Ham, Wimbledon and Brighton. Or did he play against Wimbledon? I can't remember. But anyway, the games that I saw him playing were he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. And I was kind of lucky enough to sit certainly for the West Ham and Brighton games, kind of right in line with the, you know, the last line of the defence, really. And he didn't stop talking and he was communicating. He was organising. He was really, really in control of that pairing there. And we looked pretty good. We looked pretty solid at that point. Now, obviously, the injury happens. You've got to reshuffle again. Under no circumstances should Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes be left to their own devices in that defence currently, because they lack the experience. I know that, as you mentioned, they're 22, 23. They're getting on a little bit. But they have not had the right role models around them consistently to be able to be good players at this level together without someone in there going, right, you do this, you do that. So for me, they have to take a huge, huge chunk of the blame for Saturday, because they were not good at all. And the problem for them is that they are, you know, to a point revered by the fan base because they're Reading fans, and that's great, but that only gets you so far. And for me personally, they have to now step up. You know, I saw Tom McIntyre put out a tweet saying, you know, it's not good enough, blah, blah, blah. For me, that makes it worse. You know, do you media interviews after the game? Say what you need to say, move on. Don't say anything, because actually it's just empty words. You know, if you're going to turn around and go, well, we need to do better on Wednesday. They were doing this last year and they've been doing it consistently as a group. And that's the frustrating thing, I think, that I get from our fans, because all they want to see now is actions. They just want to see us being more solid, more resolute and basically just stop being idiots on the pitch, because, you know, the positioning was farcical. And with due respect to Rotherham, they are not the most stylistic team we're going to come up against in the league this year. So you know they're going to chuck balls over the top. That's how they got promoted. So deal with it. Take a step back. You know you're going to be beaten for pace with those guys they had up front that were quicker. Just sort yourselves out. Just stop playing into teams' hands all the time, because it's so easy. And I don't know who it was, but someone made the point, you know, you target the left-hand side of our defence at the moment, or our team, and you've won the game. And that, for me, that's accurate, because you got Nesta Guinness-Walker, who was released by Wimbledon, showed a bit of promise in pre-season, signed a contract. He's the kind of player you want in and around the squad. He is not the player that's going to play 46 league games this season, because he's going to fall flat on his face. It's the same with, in some respect, with McIntyre and Holmes. And I like him as characters, but as players, it's just so frustrating watching them sometimes, because they don't play to their own strengths. They kind of just forget their position. They forget the basics and end up costing us goals on Saturday like they did. And it is a real shame, because, you know, they are our fans of the club, but so are we. And, you know, we've got to demand more from these players, and they've got to demand more from themselves as well. And I really hope for their sake that they can turn it around. I mean, they're not, you know, it's not just those three we're talking about. There was collectively across the board, there was a number of players that didn't play well. You know, the centre midfield wasn't great, obviously. That hasn't shown much protection recently. That's chopped and changed. So hopefully that can settle down. But ultimately, you know, they need people around them to be able to guide them. But they've also got to do their jobs on their own. They can't constantly be looking for other people to, you know, to do it for them.
Yeah, I mean, and the frustrating thing at the moment is that, you know, there aren't really any other options available to Paulins, but, you know, because of that, there are so many players, you know, either out injured or, you know, as we say again, with Naby Sarr still not officially signed. So, I think to end, Ben, I suppose the big question is sort of how much do we have to panic from this? Because, you know, ultimately, you know, there were some, you know, Paul Ince himself pointed it out that second half Reading, you know, weren't too bad. You know, again, I'll caveat that by saying Rotherham didn't need to play second half. They were 4-0 up. They were home and dry. They didn't need to press for any more goals or really come at Reading. But Reading did finish the game on Saturday afternoon with more shots on target, more possession, a better pass completion rate than Rotherham. The XG for the game, just out of pure interest, was Rotherham 1.3, Reading 1.2. So, you know, look, much closer than the actual scoreline suggested. For me, look, I'm one of these people that says the only stat that matters is the scoreline, and, you know, 4-0 against a team who, you know, we are expected to be fighting against for relegation this season is a very, very poor result. You know, obviously, as I say, there are caveats in the fact that, again, we had a substitutes bench on Saturday of outfield players who are all teenagers, who are all incredibly inexperienced. There are bodies to come back, but we are going to have to be dealing with injuries and lack of squad depth all season. That's just the position that we're in. You know, Ben, that, you know, as we spoke about earlier, that there was a lot of positivity after the Cardiff result, and we showed in that game that we can go toe-to-toe with a team, we can play well, we can show spirit, we can get a result. How much can we take from this game? Because I think we are almost at risk of sort of flip-flopping this season, where after every win, it's going to be, oh yes, we're incredible, we're going to defy the pundits, we're going to beat the drop, you know, we're going to be well clear of relegation, you know, and then the next week we get a result like this where, you know, it's all doom and gloom, and oh, we're going to go down, it's all going to be a long, hard season. Is in actual fact the reality somewhere in between those two, or is it one way or the other?
Well, you know, the last few years, really since Stan, has been feast or famine at this football club. It really has. And I think from my point of view, a lot of the hysteria after a win is just people just enjoying it. And I don't blame them, because, you know, there are people that go home and away. I don't tend to go away, you know, for various reasons, mainly family commitments and stuff. But people spend an absolute fortune, and what they want to see and is evident is that they want a team that's going to fight, and they want a team that they know is going to turn up. And we went into the season hoping that would be the case. Weren't massively outclassed against Blackpool, I don't think. Not second half anyway. We really deserved a draw. Cardiff, you know, after we conceded, we got ourselves sorted and we got the job done. Stevenage was Stevenage, as we said, and then obviously the horror show on Saturday. Now, if the players can turn around and go, right, that's our horror show done, we're going to knuckle down and get on with it, great. Happy days. Fantastic. We know, and most Reading fans' expectation will be just to stay in the league. We know it's going to be difficult, but I still believe we will stay up. The real issue really is going to be keeping those players fit and being able to rotate kind of almost at leisure when we can. I know we're going to come back to substitutions later on, but you know, we can't keep looking to players that we haven't got to solve problems. The players have got to get out there and they've got to stand up and compete. And you're right, you know, we had this last year with Huddersfield as well, who we expected at that point to be in and around where we are. Little did we know they were going to go on their magnificent little season that they had last year. But you know, other clubs are suffering as well, and they've heavily invested in their teams, and we haven't done that. So it is where we are. It's just a manner of the defeat, and we are gonna go backwards and forwards, but. This has been a rude awakening for everyone, and hopefully it has been for the players and the management as well. To go, look, we had a great result against Cardiff, but so what? Gives us 3 points. But at the end of the day, like we've got to be consistent here. Got two very difficult home games in the next few days coming up, and they've got to be ready for them. They've got to be mentally prepared. And I think if they're not, then we all know what's going to happen. We're going to get turned over again. So it's going to be tough. We know it's a competitive league. We've been here for what, 11 years. We know the qualities. We know the desires of the teams that we play. We've just got to start matching that now and celebrate those points when we get them and kind of not get too over the top really. But the number one priority has got to be staying in the league and 21 is the goal for me really.
Yeah, I mean, I always try and live by the old adage that, you know, don't try not to get too high with your wins or too low with your defeats. Just try and keep that happy medium. And, it, you know, we are going to get, you know, I certainly don't think a 4-0 defeat to Rotherham is going to be our worst result of the season, unfortunately. You know, but as I say, we have shown we're capable of winning games too. So it's definitely going to be a topsy-turvy one for sure. Let's hear then, rounding off the recap then, with what Paul Lynch thought of the game against Rotherham.
Listen, I think at the end of the day, it was the first 45 minutes was poor. Wasn't at the races. You know, it was weak. They bullied us. You know, we knew what was coming from Rotherham. They liked to just get it and go along. Can we prepare ourselves for that this week? But then again, we have a blatant penalty in the first minute, which the referee's got to give. I think it's one of those decisions where it might have been too early in the game, you know, to give, but he's still got to be brave and make the decision. He didn't. He bottled it at the end of the day and got it wrong again. But saying that, there's no excuse going up the pitch 5 minutes later and then scoring. We've got a habit at the moment of conceding early goals, and it's disappointing. You know, it's lack of focus, it's lack of concentration. It's the fourth time in four games that we conceded after 5, 6, 7 minutes. Can't happen. You know, we can't keep chasing the games from early on, and that's something we need to learn and get ourselves sorted out.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Mailbag time then, and Ben, we're starting off with a slightly light-hearted one to take our minds off Reading FC for a second. James Royal says, what are your favourite cheeses? Going for avoidance on Reading FC. If we don't approach the problem, it doesn't exist. I will kick us off. And I will say, it depends what sort of mood I'm in. I think if I'm going cheese in a sandwich, then I would definitely go for something like Emmental. Big fan of Emmental. Or if we're talking sort of in a pasta or in a salad, I definitely go for something like feta. Those sort of like tomato and pasta salads from supermarkets are a big favourite of mine. Ben, favourite cheese for you?
Such a difficult question because yeah. Cheese is so versatile. Honestly, like if we had a player like Cheese, we would be laughing, wouldn't we? Because they can do anything. Favorite cheese? I mean, there's this is really specific, but they do There's a cheese called Black Bomber, which is literally in like a black wax casing, which is effectively quite strong Welsh cheddar, which is just superb. And that's great in a sandwich. I like Parmesan. I mean, the real kick of a Parmesan, that's good. I'm not against a little blue cheese like Brie. I mean, that's a great question, actually.
It's probably the hardest question that I've ordered these, to be fair.
It is. I mean, you can't go wrong with Red Leicester, though, can you? You know, that's pretty... You can do that. You can stick that with meat in a sandwich if you want. You know, a nice bit of salad in there as well. Pickle, potentially. So, I'm going to have to think about that. I really am. Tough one. Very tough one.
Well, there we are. If you take nothing away from this podcast, apart from one thing, please do take away that we are big fans of cheese here on the Tartar Stem Podcast. So if anyone does want to send any, please do get in touch. And as you've heard, we will take pretty much anything, I think, by the sounds of it. Sadly, we do have to move on to more pressing matters on the team. And Daniel Wimbush, our great lord and founder of Tartar Stem, has said, thoughts on Paul Ince digging out the team and its mentality. Has the time come for tough love, or is the fragility of this squad something that needs better protecting? We heard from Paul Ince a few seconds ago, and you know, sort of saying that Reading were bullied in the first half, and I think his quote was that they let everyone down. Ben, what are your thoughts? I mean, I think Paul Ince strikes me as a manager that sort of says what he wants, and you know, we've seen that ever since he's come in. Really, you know, some of the things he does say in his interviews are perhaps out of the ordinary. He's a man who sort of lives by his own rules. Where do you sort of stand on the line of sort of calling out players publicly, or is it better to have those discussions, you know, internally?
I'm personally fully behind it because he was right. I don't like it when managers come and criticise individuals. If you're criticising the group, all for it. And I think part of that, from his point of view, was that on Thursday he talked a lot about this kind of siege mentality and improving the resilience of the group. And they showed none of that on Saturday. So I don't have any issues with that personally. I think if he was going to come out regularly and start criticising players individually, that would be a massive concern. But you know, he will be as frustrated as anybody. Did he get it wrong? Yeah. You can't, if you're the manager of a team that's conceded four goals in the first half, you have to take responsibility for that. That's the position. That's the game that we all love and hate in equal measure. So, you know, I don't have any particular issues with him calling the group out. It's just when managers come out and blame individuals, I don't like. That's always for me a behind closed doors chat. He's well within his rights to that because they were terrible. He has to demand those standards from those players. The fans do really. It is part of the game, and they have to sort this out very, very quickly. And hopefully by him doing that, we'll be a bit of a wake up call. You know, we had a bit of a softly approach last season, or very softly approach with Panovic. He protected the group an awful lot, to his detriment, I will add. You know, Ince sort of came in a little bit critical, but kind of backed off a little bit when we were getting results and kind of showing some resilience in games. But you can't, you know, whichever way you spin it, you can't defend, pardon the pun, that result and that performance on Saturday. So I think he's well within his rights to go after him.
A couple more questions on Ince then. Simon C says, successive Reading managers seem to have been reluctant to make substitutions compared to other teams. Could this have contributed to the crazy amount of injuries that we have seen? While Michael Bassett says, the most successful Reading team in the past has played with two strikers. Why are modern day managers so reluctant to play this, especially as our lone strikers struggle? I think Paul Ince would be very... it's very generous to call Paul Ince a modern day manager, but I do agree with the sentiment. Ben, I think for me, both of these questions just purely come down to the lack of options available to Ince at the moment. You know, as I say, again, Reading subs bench was made up of Dean Bazanis and on Saturday, and all the outfielders were teenagers with, you know, very minimal experience. The only striker on the bench at the weekend who could have partnered Shane Long or could have come on slightly earlier was Kelvin Ihipatiaman. Obviously scored his first senior goal against Stevenage in the League Cup last week. Obviously we also saw Jamari Clark in the League Cup. Wasn't involved at all, not even in the matchday squad against Rotherham. But he then did score for the under-21s against Burnley this afternoon. Obviously Lucas Zhao, we're not quite sure when he's going to be back. It is just a lack of options for Paul Ince at the moment for me. And I mean, I suppose building off that, would you like to see either, Ihabati Aman or Jamari Clark coming in to, either replace Shane Long? He's 35. Is he going to be able to play 90 minutes twice in a week against Blackburn? Maybe partner Shane Long on Wednesday. What's your sort of take on this, Ben?
I think with regards to Saturday, we can't look at that bench and go, right, they're going to be game changers. We're not in a position where we've got players on the bench that we know are going to turn a game or help us improve the position we're in during the match. So they're there solely to make up numbers, and hopefully it'll be a good experience for them long term. But the only thing that he could have done really, which would have been a really, really brave thing to do, would have taken Lumley off and put Pazanis on. But quite honestly, by the time you've conceded four goals and you've been at fault for definitely one, probably even two or three, as we've mentioned, as a group, how much worse can it get? So you might as well let him ride it out. It's pointless making the change there, because you've got to think long term as well. You completely destroy a player who could, and I use that in inverted commas, could be useful moving forward throughout the season. Very, very dangerous subbing a goalkeeper off at half time for a number of reasons. In terms of Big Kelvin up top, yeah, he would have been the logical one. I think that would have been a good game for him to come on. Pressure's off. We're 4-0 down. Even if you're going to get a goal, great. That builds your confidence even more. So he probably would have been the one that you'd bring on sort of, a little bit earlier maybe or whatever to try and get something out of the game. I think historically it's been because we haven't got the options available. You could argue with Paunovic, particularly early on when he wasn't making subs, that was reluctance to do that. But, it was a bit more strength and depth there at that time. So it is frustrating because we all want, things are going badly, we all want to see the manager being proactive and change it, but it's pointless being proactive for proactive sake if it's not going to make any difference. I'm not keen on just making statements for the sake of it. It's got to be for the right reason. There was very few people, if any, on that bench that you'd look at and go, well, they can help us out now and try and get us back in the game. Obviously, when we've got strength and depth, if and when we ever have that strength and depth, Ollie, who knows, then, and he's not making subs yet, by all means, go after him. But on this occasion, it's kind of like, what's the point, really? It's very, very difficult because people have very, very different views on it, and I can understand the frustration with not mixing it up. But for me, I always look at it from a footballing point of view and I go, well, what would be the point right now? It's giving players a break maybe, but three games into the season, four games into the season, you shouldn't really be looking for players to have a break particularly. So it is a difficult one to call. It really is. And I hope that we can have a bit more of a stronger bench sort of in the next few weeks moving forward.
Yeah, I have to say, if I'm being very picky, I might want to see a bit more of Jamari Clark. I think it was a bit strange that he wasn't involved, as I say, at all in the matchday squad on Saturday. We actually had a question in the mailbag last week that we missed as it came in just as we were starting recording, just sort of asking, what's happening to Jamari Clark. Obviously not really being involved too much this season, certainly in the league. Came off the bench against Stevenage in the Cup. And yeah, I think to me, certainly, we saw what he could do against Birmingham, when he came off the bench last season. That was arguably a one-off. He's still incredibly raw as a striker, and I'm not suggesting that he starts games or, he's coming on for 45 minutes or half an hour, but, we need to see what he can do, really, and, whether it's a case of him not still being fit enough, I don't know. Obviously, he had a slightly longer season last season because he went on and played international football with Jamaica's under-20s and did very well with them as well, so whether it's the case he's not quite fully fit yet, I don't know. But certainly I think, in the absence of Lucas Zhao, our options are Kelvin Ihabati Aman or Jamari Clark up front. And, as I say, Shane Long at 35 isn't going to be able to hold the fort for the next few weeks playing 90 minutes Saturday, Tuesday. So something's got to give, I think, in terms of bringing those youngsters through. Final question in the mailbag then, from Dave Andrews, who says, do you think we will actually get Naby Sarr over the line? And we will move on to that day. We will answer that question. Well, try and answer that question in News Bites with a little roundup of all the latest transfer activity.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Yeah, let's kick off News Bites then with a transfer update on Naby Sarr. You know, it seems to be the same every week, really, that we sort of hope to be having him available for the next game. And again, on Saturday after the Rotherham game, Paul Ince said that he hopes to have Naby Sarr available to face Blackburn on Wednesday. We're now recording this on Monday night, and there has still been no announcement regarding Naby Sarr. So whether that happens in the next 48 hours, last week I would have said yes, but you know, the longer it goes on and it's not announced, then the more doubt arises, I suppose, in the fact that he's not going to sign. You know, look, as far as everyone's concerned, Naby Sarr is still in and around the Reading squad. He's still training at Bearwood every day. I think he's, you know, looking for a house in the area, or certainly, you know, he's in and around the area at the moment. You know, he is everything. You know, I'm pretty sure I said exactly this on last week's show, and it doesn't seem as if anything's really changed, really. But he is a Reading FC player in every sense of the word, apart from it being officially confirmed. And, you know, it's just that AFL confirmation that awaits. And, you know, whether it's a case the club have to get someone out of the door, you know, probably most likely George Puskas before, you know, a deal for Naby Sarr happens, you know, who knows. But, you know, I suppose it does come a point, you know, that does Naby Sarr almost start, you know, asking his agent, am I going to have to look for a club elsewhere at some point? Because it's been two and a half weeks now since that photo emerged of him in a Reading kit, and he's still not been announced. So surely in his mind, I'd have thought that he's possibly getting cold feet maybe a little bit and maybe getting a bit worried. So he may well have some backup options and you know, Reading might lose out on him, but we will have to wait and see on that one. Any other transfer news? Paul Ince mentioned last week that the club do have a left back lined up to sign on loan from a Premier League club, but just waiting approval from that club this time. So not necessarily the EFL at the moment. Obviously, the EFL will still need to approve that one as well. But it sounds as though sort of this Premier League club, this unnamed Premier League club, is weighing up whether they want to lose this left back on loan for the season. So potentially, I suppose, maybe a return for Baba Rahman, who's currently doing nothing at Chelsea by the sounds of it. But plenty of other sort of, you know, we might well see this towards the end of the window now. You know, we're now in the final sort of 2.5 weeks where Premier League teams are finalising their squads for the campaign, and you know, players do become available for loan for the season, and Reading might be able to secure a few details, a few deals. Latest on injuries, Obi Ajaria missed the Rotherham game through a hamstring problem. He played through that hamstring issue against Cardiff last week. Paul Ince is probably going to be out for around a month. He joins Sam Hutchinson, Scott Dann, Dejan Tetek, Lucas Yao, Yaku Mate and Femi Aziz. That injury list is still incredibly dauntingly long for this stage of the season. They're all still sidelined. It sounds as though Sam Hutchinson is probably the closest to returning out of those lot. Scott Dann and Dejan Tetek have recently returned to light training, and Yaku Mate and Lucas Yao are expected to step up their recoveries over the next week. And obviously, one name I didn't mention there was Liam Moore, who, all intents and purposes, is not a Reading player at the moment. He's being paid by the club, but he's not been given a squad number. And it sounds that as soon as he's fit, the aim is to try and shift him off the wage bill. Latest on Reading FC women, they have made another new signing in the last week. They went a bit crazy. 2 weeks ago, they brought in three players to miss of one day. They brought in another player in this last week, 33-year-old Irish defender Diane Caldwell. She's signed on a free transfer after her release from Manchester United. She spent almost all of her career abroad, but she did make 5 appearances for United in the WSL last season. Very experienced defender, can also play midfield. Got 87 international caps for the Republic of Ireland. Reading FC Women did begin their pre-season friendlies at the weekend with a 2-1 defeat to women's championship side Bristol City. It is now less than a month to go before their first game of the WSL season at home at the Select Car Leasing Stadium against Liverpool on September the 11th. Tickets are on sale for that one now. So if you do want to go and support the women in light of England's Euro 2022 triumph, do get down to the Select Car Leasing Stadium on September the 11th at 2 p.m. kickoff for that one against Liverpool. The men's under-18s, they began their season with a 3-1 defeat to Wigan on Saturday, although that's not even been updated on the club website yet, which tells you how much attention the club are paying to the under-18 side this year. They host Burnley at Bearwood next weekend. Speaking of Burnley, the under-21s did beat the Clarets to get their season off to a winning start this afternoon, on Monday afternoon. First half goals from Jamari Clark and Basil Tuma. Basil Tuma, of course, 17-year-old, has been involved in the first team squad a couple of times so far this season. Both of him and Jamari Clark scored in a 2-0 victory for Noel Hunt's under-21 side. And their next game is away to Coventry on Tuesday the 23rd. Right, I think that's just about everything round up. A lot to round up at the moment, all the injuries and transfers and everything. But let's get into then the big match preview with two big home games coming up over the next week for Reading.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yeah, two big home games then over the next week for Reading. Blackburn on Wednesday night and then Middlesbrough on Saturday. It is just Reading's luck that they come up against Blackburn on Wednesday. Blackburn are the only team in the Championship with 9 points from a possible 9 so far this season. They got a 2-1 win over West Brom, I think it was, on Sunday. I put Swansea here, but they beat Swansea on the opening day. So that's off the top of my head, I think it was West Brom. And then they beat QPR 1-0 and Swansea 3-0. Incredibly, they've managed to keep hold of Ben Brereton-Diaz this summer. Whether he's still a Blackburn player come September the 2nd, I'd be incredibly surprised if he was. But he remains their danger man at the moment with 2 goals in 3 games. Obviously, they've got a new man in charge. The Tony Mowbray era is over for Blackburn. They've got Danish boss John Dahl Tomasson in the dugout. Interestingly, I have to credit Biscuit Analytic, the account on Twitter, for this one, Ben. But Blackburn have scored 6 goals this season, despite their XG for all three of their games being just 1.6. You can pay as much attention to XG as you like, but they are massively outscoring their XG this season. 4 of their 6 goals have come from outside of the area. Dare I say shades of Veljko Paunovic's start to life in England 2 years ago?
Yeah, for sure. Look, they've got a new manager bounce, sort of fizzled out towards the end of last season when it became apparent that Mowbray was not going to be asked to stay on. Whether or not they've gone through, a major evolution, I don't know, really. I don't think Diaz will stay. Think he probably deserves. He's had enough in the lower leagues and probably deserves his shot. Higher up in the Premier League, certainly. So, all the best to him when he does go. But look, it's very, very difficult at this stage of the season to discredit the fact that they've won 3 games, regardless of who they played. The inconsistencies in the league are very apparent already. Beating West Brom is. They will probably look back on that and go, wow, that was a cracking result. Swansea didn't start well, but picked up a result of the weekend. QPR sort of fair to middling, so they're not beating bottom feeders, really. They're beating some traditionally all right teams. Whether or not they are going to be able to keep this up, I don't know. I really don't know. From our point of view, I don't think it should be a daunting prospect to face them at home, particularly. They've done well up until this point, but their start won't last. So we might as well be the team to stop them from winning the fourth game in a row. Really, it's not going to be easy. Without the cliche, but no games in this division are easy. We look at Middlesbrough on Saturday, a bit further ahead. They've had a pretty iffy start to the season, as have Norwich, as have Stoke with all their new signings. You know, Luton haven't been great. Bristol City already talking about replacing the manager. So it's not panic mode for Reading at the moment, certainly not. But it's you know, we do need to get this home form right. And that was the one thing that I really wanted to see an improvement from heading into this season, is that we pick up points and we become a lot more resilient at home. So I'm hoping that we can go into the game on Wednesday night and be, you know, see a team that's a bit more committed, a bit more mentally on it, and a bit more kind of stable all round, really, to try and get at least a point out of the game. You know, the block of games that we've had this week, Rotherham, Blackburn, and culminating in Borough at the weekend. I personally targeted 4 points. I think that'd be a great return, and it would be an even better return now, considering the result we had on Saturday against Rotherham. So there's opportunities for players to come in. I don't think they will, to be honest, as we've mentioned previously. But it would be good to put on a bit more of a resolute show, and you know, and not get walked over on Wednesday night, really.
I presume those 4 points, at least one of them was coming against Rotherham at the weekend.
It was originally, yeah, but I'll definitely take 4 points now. Hopefully with something. I mean, it's a big ask, I know, but even so, 4 points from now would be even better than including the Rotherham game, basically.
Well, Reading are 3 points from three in their home games this season. You know, we spoke glowingly the performance last weekend against Cardiff. So any sort of replication on that, and certainly I think home results are going to have to be important this season. You know, they did feel actually a really good vibe around the place at the Cardiff game. You know, whether that is early season optimism, you know, the fact that it was nice weather, but it did seem as though, you know, that there was a real buzz around the place last weekend. So if we can replicate that on Wednesday night, people hopefully aren't too disheartened by the result at the weekend. But they are both tough games. You know, again, Middlesbrough, you know, not had the best start to the season so far. They're obviously one of the pre-season promotion favourites, Chris Wilder in charge, who I think, you know, we all rate incredibly highly. But they have only taken 2 points from their three games so far. Draws against West Brom and Sheffield United, either side of a defeat to QPR. So, you know, a couple of tough games chucked in there for them. You know, they are away at Stoke on Wednesday night before they come to the Select Carl Lucing Stadium. But in terms of changes, Ben, you know, we've spoken about it a little bit already. Paul Ince's hands are tied to a certain degree in sort of terms of the players available to him. You know, whether Naby Sarr does get over the line for this Blackburn game or maybe the Middlesbrough game, who knows, whether someone like Sam Hutchinson comes back from injury. You know, we've mentioned it, but he's got a decision to make in terms of his goalkeeper. You know, up front again, as I say, Shane Long at 35, I'd be very surprised if he was able to play 90 minutes for all three of these games. You know, he didn't come off against Rotherham at the weekend, so I'd be incredibly surprised if he played 90 minutes against both Blackburn and Middlesbrough. You know, Lucas Joao, I don't think he's going to be back for either of those games, or Yaku Mate. So he's probably having a couple of sleepless nights this week, Paul Ince, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, the only real question mark is Sarr for me. If he is allowed to play down to EFL regulations, then he will come straight in. I would imagine at that point that Hoylett would either be drop out or be pushed up higher. You know, play the back three with him in the middle.
Are you advocating Junior Hoylett to be dropped, Ben?
Well, I am and I'm not. You know, personally, from a selfish point of view, I think he's a good player. You know, I've gone to death the reasons to why, but he's not a right wing back. He's not any sort of wing back whatsoever now. No. Once upon a time, maybe he was, but you know, he would be the logical one to drop out. The only thing I would say is that, you know, although it wasn't a strikers game on Saturday, you know, Long was pretty sprightly, but I think I would agree with you in the fact that it's going to be very, very difficult for him to knock out another 90 minutes when he's done. You know, obviously Cardiff had a break, although I think he was involved in a squad on Tuesday night against Stevenage. Didn't come on, though. Obviously, Rotherham, he had most of the game, if not all the game, from memory. So I think it's going to be difficult. I mean, you know, why not stick Big Kelvin and Jamari Clark up top together and just see what happens? Because
they're a bit of an unknown quantity. I would imagine that Blackburn would have done some scouting, but again, they're fairly new to this. So it would be worthwhile potentially sticking them in. It's very, very difficult to see anything other than a fairly unchanged team. I don't think he'll change the goalkeeper. I don't think he'll stick Bouzanis in, personally. It's going to be difficult to see any major changes unless, of course, there is a sudden clear out of the medical room and everyone's suddenly fit, which I doubt very much. So you're looking at Sarr coming in and potentially mixing up top. But other than that, midfield pretty much picks itself. You'd like to think that Tom Holmes and Tom McIntyre will be given the opportunity to try and redeem themselves, and they need to redeem themselves, to be honest. Guinness Walker, again, sort of on the fence about. I mean, he's not brilliant by any stretch, but there's something there, and we need to start seeing that quite quickly, really, in terms of the confidence building. So, you know, it's very much dependent on Sarr and any players coming back from injury to see any major changes in the team that we had against Rotherham, really.
Yeah, I mean, it is a quick turnaround from Saturday to Wednesday, so I would be surprised if any injured players, as I say, I think Sam Hutchinson's probably the closest to coming back. But yeah, and I suppose the positive thing with Naby Sarr is that if he does get the EFL clearance, then he hopefully is okay to come straight in, because he has been training, you know, with Reading's squad over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, maybe not match fit, he's not played any sort of competitive football since the end of May, so it might take a bit of time to get up to speed, but he has been training, so it's not a case of him having to come in and get completely up to speed. He has got some, you know, activity under his belt. Let's get into some predictions then. I have to say, we have been absolutely woeful so far at these predictions so far this season. Adam Jones was the only one to stick his neck on the line and say Reading would lose to Rotherham at the weekend. He only said 1-0 though, but he is the only one with a point on the board after three games, which I think might even be unheard of. Adam's the only one to get a single point on the board in the predictions league so far. Ben, we won't go as far ahead as Middlesbrough, because I'm sure that might well be affected by what happens on Wednesday. But can I get your prediction for when Blackburn visit the Select Carlisle Stadium?
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1. I think we will shut up shop a lot better than we have done or did on Saturday. I don't see us having enough to win the game by any stretch, but I feel like the least, and this is going to sound so awful and so cheesy, but I feel like the least we deserve as fans is some sort of positive result after Saturday. So I'm hoping for a 1-1 draw. I'm going to predict that, and that will keep the kind of the unbeaten home stretch in the league going to two games this season.
which might be the longest unbeaten run we have all season in at home, possibly. I'm really torn, because, you know, as much as we want to keep the positivity going, I am going to go for a 1-0 win for Blackburn. I just kind of think I can't see. I mean, if Naby Sarr's not been confirmed today, Monday night, I think it's unlikely we'll see Naby Sarr, unfortunately, on Wednesday. And I just kind of think Ben Brereton-Diaz, who, you know, as we all know, is one of the best strikers in this league, can score goals for fun, has got pace as well. Based off that display at the weekend, it's going to take some improvement from the likes of McIntyre and Holmes to keep him quiet. So I'm going to go for a 1-0 win for Blackburn, unfortunately. That does just about round up episode 305 of the Tile SDM podcast. Hopefully you have enjoyed. It's not always the most entertaining, these podcasts, when we go through such heavy defeats. But hopefully a bit of therapy, and we tried to stay as level-headed as possible. So, Ben, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
No problem at all. You know, two big games coming up. So let's hope we can enjoy at least one of them and go from there and try and build on the season, really. But take care, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much again for listening. Saturday was certainly a reminder of the brutal nature of the Championship. We've got 9 more months of this to come. So strap yourselves in, keep those heads up, and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs. Very nearly turned into DJ Mega Party there, but I think I just about saved.
You did, yeah. It was very, very DJ Mega Party there. Thank you.
you smile. Funny how the crowd